Welcome to the Far and Beyond podcast, hosted by the Contracts and Fiscal Law Department at the Judge Advocate General's Legal Center and School. This podcast is for the federal government attorney navigating the complex intersection of acquisitions and fiscal law and policy. I am your host, Major Ellie Sewell.
And I'm co-hosting Major Hyun Muniz.
On this episode of Far and Beyond, we have two special guests with us, Mr. Adam Cottle and Ms. Christine Kassekert. Thank you so much for joining us today. We're going to be talking about OTAs, or other transaction authorities. Welcome back to part two of our conversation with Mr. Adam Cottle and Ms. Christine Kassekert. If you haven't heard the first half yet, you'll definitely want to go back and check that out for the full context. Picking up right where we left off, here's the rest of our deep dive into other transactions. All of this has been fantastic. I'm learning a lot, and a lot of it is there are rules, but more like guidelines, you know, pirate's code here. But we're still attorneys at the end of the day, and I know a lot of the times when we're advising people, it's, well, what's the risk? The risk for what? And usually what we think, at least in acquisitions, is protest. So what is the remedy? What is the protest risk for maybe something not going quite right?
Or the, you know, the question of the day, right? Like, can you protest an OT? Because for the longest time, people believe that you couldn't. Or is that still the case? I mean, I feel like it's been a little hot in Court of Federal Claims, maybe have ruled on that Raytheon case. Would you like to kind of share your opinions on that?
There's no question you can protest the award of a prototype other transaction award or the award of a follow-on production award. So the myth that is out there, and this is actually reflected in the OT guide, that you can't protest an OT is truly a myth. The forum right now I would describe as not settled. So GAO has said that they generally will not review protests of an award or solicitation for the award of the other transaction agreements under their bid protest jurisdiction. They've said this in a number of cases. The one that's in front of me is Spartan Medical, which the B number is 419-503, if we have any listeners who are dying to look that up. That came from 2021. And in Spartan Medical, they said the only exception to this general rule pertains to situations where an agency is exercising its OTA authority and the protester files a timely pre-closing date protest alleging the agency is, and here's the standard, improperly exercising that authority. Now, for those of you who are familiar with the Oracle decision in 2018, arguably GAO went further than that, but we haven't seen that recently. And that doesn't mean that GAO is not a forum for bid protests. It means that if they follow this standard, they will conduct an inquiry as to whether we appropriately used our other transaction authority. We talked earlier in the podcast about how broad 4022A is and how broad that definition of a prototype project is, but we should be concerned about making sure that we have appropriately documented the use of our authority to be able to deal with the GAO protest. We should have that anyway, but it should be clearly documented. And oftentimes we have an idea of what we're going to get as far as prototype projects when we put out our solicitation for another transaction. But as those, I'm going to say proposals come in, but once again, they don't have to be proposals. They could be white papers. They could be demonstrations. They could be a number of different things. Whatever our first stage process is, we should be thinking about if what we received, we need to modify what we have in our files to make sure it's clear that we're acting within our authority, especially if we got that unicorn approach that we thought we were going to get, for example, an agile software product, and what we really now have is a commercial technology that's never been used in DoD before, right? So making sure that we're touching that base with respect to GAO in case that were to go there, I think is important. But the real play is at the Court of Federal Claims right now, which for those of us as program attorneys means that we will be interfacing with the Department of Justice. And our clients, I think, need to understand the world of, in GAO protests, they understand how the contract file gets put together. Most of our folks are seasoned enough. They've been through at least one bid protest. When we're dealing with the Department of Justice, when we're dealing with the Court of Federal Claims, I'm going to call it real litigation, and I don't mean that pejoratively, right? But we're not under a 100-day decision. We're not looking only at the relevant documents that are generally in the contracting file. Now we're looking at a broader scope of production. And the standard there is under the Tucker Act in 28 U.S.C. 1491b1, and that is in connection with a procurement or a proposed procurement. And while we have a handful of Court of Federal Claims cases trying to get at our prototype OTs subject to that jurisdiction, and we have a number of places where the court has found jurisdiction, we also have a few where they have not, we do not have, I'll call it a final decision, because the Department of War has won on the substance of all of those claims. So there has been no reason to appeal the jurisdictional decisions when ultimately we have won all of the protests before the Court of Federal Claims. And so if you read a lot of what private industry is putting out, it makes it sound sometimes as if this is a settled area of law. And I think there is a logical position to say, we do see a trend, but I don't think we have that final decision about jurisdiction. And so whenever we talk about who has protest jurisdiction, we talk about GAO, we talk about the Court of Federal Claims. We've had at least one decision filed in district court that then wasn't decided by the district court, but we may have district court authority depending on what ultimately happens with the Tucker Act under the Court of Federal Claims. I think the best advice to program attorneys is back to what Adam said at the beginning. Are we documenting our business decisions so that we're acting reasonably and we're exercising prudent business judgment? I don't see a way that we can develop solicitations or processes or procedures that is going to remove jurisdiction from the Court of Federal Claims. And ultimately, if we're making good business decisions, we're doing what we need to do for our clients to set us up to be able to proceed without delay with those protests. And Adam, I don't know what your thoughts are on the protests.
Yeah, certainly happy to build on that. One is this idea that there's no review of it. Courts are decidedly uncomfortable with the idea of having very large, sometimes OTAs that are unreviewable. We've seen a lot of that in the language of they are very, very uncomfortable. And when courts are uncomfortable, we notice they tend to find a way to get jurisdiction and to actually address the points. The courts can be very creative in how they come up with ways of saying, yeah, I'm actually going to address this and make myself comfortable. So attorneys need to be mindful of that. And all the things that Christine said are totally valid. But also, I'd like to expand the definition of risk. As attorneys, our default, yes, is protest. But there are so many more other types of risks that we need to be aware of that, and we should be the ones who are really thinking and saying, okay, what are the actual big picture risks? Yes, there is litigation. There is also simply, and we've seen contractors do this many, many times, going to the administration, going to senior leadership, going to Congress, going to the media. There are all kinds of other ways that contract other venues and forums that are not protests that unsuccessful offerors, we call them that, can go to and say, hey, I think I should get an award. We've seen this multiple times. They can go to senior leadership, for example. And so that documentation part, to be able to go back and say, this is why we made the decision that we did, that has to be there, because otherwise you're going to be left with a senior leader potentially saying, hey, I got a call from the White House or from a member of Congress. The member of Congress is coming here. He or she would personally like a briefing as to what we did and why we did it. And since you're post-award, guess what? You can't say, I'm sorry, this is pre-decisional. You've already made your decision, and it may be the Secretary of the Army may be asked before Congress of please explain why you did not award your OTA to this particular vendor. Our listeners need to be very mindful that risk involves far more than simply a bid protest. It involves many other forums that we need to be mindful of and be able to support and justify our decision and say, this is what we did. This is why we did it. This is why this decision was in the best interest of the Department of War, of the Department of the Army, of the United States government, wherever you may be, whatever agency you may work for. And that way, it is a fully justified, supportable risk. Otherwise, you may be told, hey, guess what? You didn't really justify that. You need to go back and redo that something. And so your attempt to get to speed, your attempt to go fast, may be completely undone through a variety of different ways. So please be mindful of the variety of forums in which a unsuccessful offer can go to try to get that award. Because especially with Secretary Hegseth talking about he wants longer contracts, he wants bigger contracts. If you have a fixed pot of money, that means fewer contracts. The math only works out that way. Fewer contracts means contractors who are going to be a little bit more willing to push and say, no, I really need this contract, this OTA, in order to survive.
I'd like to put a plug in, a shameless plug, for a webinar that TJAGLIC sponsors with DAU called the OT Council Corner. Each October, we have had a protest update where we've been lucky enough to have support from CLIP and from the Department of Justice attorneys. And so please keep an eye out for the OT Council Corner each October. Of course, we had a little hiccup in October of last year, and so we're working on rescheduling this one, but you'll see that. The other side of things then is obviously the litigation component that comes after you make an award, right? And so our forum for those is generally assumed that absent anything else, there would be a Court of Federal Claims option for disputes under another transaction agreement. Now, I want to pause there because most of our agreements have an internal escalation procedure. I think that comes out of the DARPA model. A lot of folks pull down DARPA's document and use it as a starting point when they're drafting their other transactions. And there's a whole process by which first, you know, the agreements officers will do something, and then maybe the program looks at something, and then maybe there's a head of contracting activity, and then maybe there's an executive director. I mean, match however that looks in your organization of folks going up. And there's some sort of an internal escalation to try and resolve any kind of misunderstanding before it would go outside to a court. We see very few disputes during prototyping. You know, everybody's trying to get on the same page and contractors are willing to work with us because it typically is that the real money is when you get to a follow-on production agreement. So all the incentives are in place during prototyping to avoid disputes, and it's not really a big issue. The one place where I've seen a number of, I'll call them disputes, in the prototyping phase is when we terminate. And if we've set up our other transactions to be paid on a milestone basis, and we have not included FAR Part 12 language that says we're going to pay based on a percentage of completion, speaking of FAR clauses you should not cut and paste into another transaction agreement, if we have established our milestones correctly, when you get to the end of a milestone, you can choose not to proceed. And it's a natural termination point, and it shouldn't be causing anyone to have a dispute over how much is owed. But we do see places where we have agreements officers issue terminations, and there is not agreement on how much should be paid to the performer at the time of the termination. And so if there was going to be a dispute as far as a prototype agreement, I think that's the most likely place that we as attorneys need to be keeping an eye on that.
Yeah. One thing I think our commanders, though, if we ask them what the risk is, they're not going to care that much about litigation, let's be honest. That's not something our commanders are going to think about. When they think about risk, and the worst case scenario for an OTA is a prototype that drags on forever and doesn't actually deliver anything. That is the risk that from a business side that we need to be mindful of is what we think about risk, what our customers think about risk, maybe two vastly different things. And our customers would much rather have a prototype that fails quickly within a month, 12 months, 6 months, some time frame that's fairly short of knowing this prototype isn't working and have that bailout point and say, we're done, move on to something else. And so that's one thing we need to really, I think our listeners need to really think about is, okay, how do we structure this OTA to minimize that business risk so things don't drag on without getting a bad result at the end of it? And we've seen this with numerous Army projects over the last 30 years. We can talk about the Comanche, the Future Combat Systems. They weren't OTAs, they were FAR-based contracts. But things that drag on, the Army spends, and Department of War in general, spends tens of billions of dollars on projects that don't go anywhere, on prototypes that don't go anywhere. And so fail fast is what we're supposed to be doing, as we've been very clearly, explicitly instructed. Set up your OTAs in a way that, hey, you know what, if things go south, they go south very quickly, so you can cut bait here and go fish somewhere else. Okay, so don't have things that drag on. Don't have the OTA drag on for the sake of the OTA dragging on, please. Be in mind what our customers want, which is fail fast, or at least know you're on a good path to success. We don't want things to be going on forever and having this indeterminable, well, maybe next year we'll get a better prototype.
Well, and stop thinking about, am I going to issue a base plus 4 years for a period of performance? That's not how we should be thinking about structuring other transactions if you're part of the team that is shaping the award. It should be, what is the decision point at which we need to figure out whether it fails or not?
Yeah.
If that's 3 months, is that 6 months, is that 9 months? Mm-hmm. And how do I build up to that? And can I stop that?
Yeah. What does success look like at every point along the way? And if you aren't defining success, then you're by definition defining failure. And so if you don't have a clear idea of at stage one, stage two, stage three, these are the key markers that allows me to go on, you're probably not going to be in good shape anywhere along the way. And we've got to be changing our mentality about this and making certain that we have clear markers, we have clear off-ramps. If there's a way to introduce competition along the way, even better. But absolutely understanding what is it we're trying to get to, how quickly are we trying to get to, at what cost are we trying to get to, and where do we say this is not working, move on to something else.
Yeah, and on the on-ramp, off-ramp piece, so when we do Competition and Contracting Act awards, there is a due date, and if you have not submitted the proposal by the due date, it is late, and we get dinged if we let you back in. Other transactions, we don't have a quote-unquote due date unless we set our own due date.
Yeah.
So many of the other transaction agreements that I've worked on, we issue that problem statement, and this is the beauty of using a DIU-typed commercial solutions opening with an open-ended due date. I might start working with two or three companies to think about whether we're going to do a prototype award. I might start prototyping with them. But unless I have done something to tie my own hands, if another company comes on the radar screen that has a way to solve that problem that I want to talk to, it's not that the due date has passed and it's too late. You just pull them in.
Yeah.
Start talking to them. But I do think that kind of goes back to, from a leadership perspective, that mentality of how am I managing this process? Because I can absolutely be pulling in new people every week and extending out something I don't have the money and I don't have the manpower to do well. And so these are decisions that need to be made, once again, not only by the subject matter team, but by the broader team who's talking about how this is going to play out over time. I don't have those constraints, though. And so I can not move forward with someone at a certain point in time. I can just sort of suspend performance, and I do not use the word suspend in terms of a suspension and debarment. I can just say, okay, we've hit milestone A. Thank you very much. Hang out there for a bit. I can go work with another company who I think is more promising, or that I just need to have two companies at milestone A catch up. And then I can go make a milestone, and I'm using milestone, which is probably terribly confusing for people who are doing milestone A and B in terms of process that we are familiar with using, but all I'm really talking about are payment milestones when I'm saying, you know, your first one, your second one, your third one. I can work with company A for 3 months. I can tell them to hang out for a bit. I can go work with company B to get them to the same point so I have competition. I can then go back to company A and say, okay, now we're going to move forward. And the fact that I didn't have a modification in place before the end of the, and I'm using air quotes here, period of performance, does not stop me from going back and modifying the prototype award to extend it, because the Competition and Contracting Act does not apply. Sometimes this is referred to as a basket concept. I can put certain white papers in a basket and come back to them later, but the same concept applies in the prototyping process, that I can make decisions about who I'm going to focus on, who I'm going to move forward with, without necessarily stopping whatever I'm developing with somebody else. But you still have to manage that. It's a very different mentality.
This is crazy to me. Someone who's done most of my time doing part 15. No, I'm like, what do you mean there's no deadlines? What do you mean I can keep them in? This is great.
But it always comes back to business judgment. At the end of the day, we have a fixed amount of people, sometimes shrinking number. We have a fixed budget that we can put on those people. And so you've got to say what actually works for us. It's got to be tailored, sound business judgment of, this is what we need to get done. These are the resources we have available to get this thing done, this prototype developed, and how do we be most efficient in it? And that's really what we're about at the end of the day, is helping our customers manage the legal risk to actually execute on the mission that they've been assigned to by senior leadership of getting whatever prototype, whatever production that we need, we're trying to get to. In the case of a Corps of Engineers, whatever construction, because they can now use OTAs for construction as well in the Corps of Engineers, which is a whole different issue we haven't talked about. But that's really what we have to be mindful of, is how do we help our customers execute on their assigned mission at the acceptable level of risk? Notice I didn't say minimal risk. I said acceptable level of risk. Okay. So be mindful of all these things. Think through them. Call up your good friends like Christine, who knows all the answers. And help, you know, we're always, of course, here to help and try to execute on that. So that way, at the end of the day, we're about supporting the warfighters, make certain that they have the tools they need to be successful in prosecuting action wherever they may be called upon.
One of the tools we have to manage risk as lawyers advising on these agreements is, are we being transparent with industry and what we're doing? We don't have to hide the fact from them that, you know, we're moving forward with a different project, or that we're not moving forward with them, or that we're putting them in a basket. When I talk about that, I often talk about it in terms of what we do with folks when we interview them for jobs, right? You usually don't tell your number two or your number three candidate that they are completely out of the running until your first candidate shows up for work, right? Too many things can go wrong. You don't want to rerun that competition. So there are reasons to maybe not tell them exactly what's happening, but to tell a company, we have determined that your technology is really not what we're looking for, so that their business development people are not wasting time, right? And we're not building bad will with industry in our process. Sometimes in a protest setting, that is confused with what we teach folks about our standards for GAO. We always tell folks, whatever we put in our solicitation, we have to follow what's in the solicitation and we cannot deviate. And so we call that transparency, and we say, once it's in writing, once the solicitation goes out the door, you can't change that. With other transactions, we absolutely can change that, but we need to be clear. We don't want to lose folks because we weren't clear with what we were looking for, what we were trying to accomplish. We don't want folks to feel like they've wasted their time participating in another transaction. So you want a low barrier to entry, not a full-blown proposal like we see in a FAR. Maybe they're coming in with a deck they would use to pitch to anybody else that they were selling in the commercial environment to. Maybe it's a shorter white paper. Maybe you're just doing conversations with folks as your initial, you know, is this worth going forward with or not? Or, you know, low barrier to entry so that we're not wasting their time. The further they get in, the more we should be collaborating with them and talking to them, and they should have an idea of, is this worth their time? Is this going forward? And that kind of transparency in terms of managing risk not only helps you make the project come out better, but the more everyone has some transparency, the less likely you're going to see these kinds of protests because somebody is upset with the way that we handled things or they felt they were treated unfairly.
I mean, that was amazing. I've loved hearing everything you guys had to say. And I love that you dispelled a lot of the myths for the listeners, of course, not me. I already knew all that stuff. So thank you.
Oh, I did not know any of that stuff. My mind is blown right now. I learned a lot of things. This is great. Thank you so much for joining us today, taking time out to come and speak with us. Like I said, I've just learned a lot about other transactions that I just had no idea or didn't even think about. So thank you again.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for joining us today in this episode of Far and Beyond. Please make sure to follow us and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. We love to hear from our listeners. Please continue to reach out to us on Facebook and LinkedIn. The information can be found in the show notes from today's episode. The views expressed today are those of the presenters, not that of the Judge Advocate General Corps, the Department of the Army, the Department of the Air Force, the Defense Health Agency, or the Department of War.